Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And that's the cue.
That's the cue.
Welcome to all our admirable friends out there.
Yes, welcome. Welcome. It's Tuesday.
It is. It's Tuesday. 9th. And I don't know whether it's a, you know, we're all by ourselves today. No guests.
We got
ourselves. Is that good news or is that bad news? I don't know.
No, it's going to be a good show because we had a lot of good interest and good comments on the Authentic with Gabby and Alex and the Authenticity Show.
Yeah.
And we kind of crammed in at the end the thought of journaling. And
we touched upon it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
so,
we didn't give it as much time as it really deserved.
Yeah, so we decided to extend the Authenticity Show into tonight and get into more specifics on the journaling. So we sent out an email to everybody on our list. And again, if you want to get on our list, go to hello@admirablefriends.org. But we sent out an email with a link to an actual journal that we filled out some samples with. We didn't disclose names.
No.
We kind of get a feel for what it's like to actually keep a journal and kind of contemplate about our actions and where they lead us. So it should be a real interesting discussion. And I encourage our guests to use the chat
tonight. Absolutely, yes.
So they can interact with us or call, of course.
Or during the week or after the show, if they start filling it out and they kind of hit a little bump to, you know, get in touch with us and we'll see if we can't give them some ideas or whatever. But it's kind of, it's interesting. It's going to be a little bit mixed of going over last week and then starting kind of a workshop thing. So we'll see how it goes.
Terrific. Okay. Well, let's start. Start with your gratitudes, if you like.
My gratitude. Well, I'm grateful for my work assistant. Her name is Michelle. And tomorrow's her last day. She's moving on to greener pastures. She got a great opportunity, and I couldn't be happier for her. But I'm so grateful because as a co-worker, she brings such joy to my day. It's like there's so much laughter. I really do enjoy having a co-worker like that, and I'm going to miss her terribly. But I'm just grateful I had the chance to have her over the last year to share my work day with. She certainly made it not so much work, but a little bit more fun.
So in terms of using that word grateful, so there's actually some actions that you have learned from and that possibly you can bring into your life rather than just appreciating Michelle.
Right.
So what do you think has changed your life or impacted your life as a result of Michelle's presence with you?
Well, I think it's the laughter. I really do like that humor aspect. I love a good laugh, first of all. I mean, I just love to laugh. I love the way I feel when I laugh. I love the residual effect after I laugh. And I really do. I don't think it should be reserved for just outside of the office. I do think there's a time and a place for it, but, you know, levity does have its place in the workforce.
Oh, for sure. Well, that's great. My gratitude tonight, actually, I'm going to call an audible because, as you know, before we got on the show tonight, we were sitting back and listening to Frank Sinatra on our stereo. And I kind of reflected and what I'm grateful for, let's see if I can say this without screwing up. I'm grateful to the practice and to the examples that have set before me on practicing, but like we are towards reliable happiness. But what I realized in listening to the music was that I was able to enjoy it without attachment to it. It was just listening to it, just enjoying it. We were both singing My Way, and it was great.
It was. We both had smiles on our faces, just kind of.
But I can remember when I used to listen to it, it was like not knowing when to stop or wanting to hear music. And so not really knowing the difference between the joy of the senses plus just being quiet is something that I'm grateful to the practice for learning to delineate or discern between the two. For some reason, and like the weekend, we had a great weekend, just the weekend. And then it's over, you know, it's no attachment to it. So I'm grateful for learning how to enjoy the good times and not kind of hang on to them or, you know, hope for them to continue or to last.
Try to recreate them. And
yeah. Just,
yeah. That's,
does that make any sense?
It sure does. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of called an audible for that gratitude.
Nice. Look at you. You going off script. Well, okay,
taking
so how do you want
off.
To start?
Taking my hair, let my hair down. Okay, so let's, again, tonight's show is on journaling, authentic journaling, or what you either, authentically is the way we fill it out, but you like to call it a contemplative journal or a contemplation journal.
Yes, I like contemplation journal because I think authenticity is the action with which you use is the tool you use to fill it out.
Yes.
But I like the reflective, contemplative nature of the journal because once you write it out, then you look it over and then you kind of marinate in it and mull it over and just kind of readdress.
So the very nature of using it or the act of using it is a contemplation process. While you're doing it, you're being authentic. Is that
yes.
what you're saying?
That's exactly.
Okay, so we changed the name on the title of it from an authentic journal to a contemplation journal because of what you had told me.
Oh,
I changed
okay.
it. I don't know if you saw that in the latest one, but I did change it. But getting back to authenticity.
Do you think we should start off with the definition?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead with that?
Well, the definition of authenticity, which is one of the truth qualities, is the honest effort to be aware of the true intentions preceding our actions, our words, and our thoughts.
Yeah. And can you kind of contrast that to autopilot? Take the definition, and what would you truncate out of that statement? If you were to say autopilot is?
Being unaware.
Of your intentions.
Yes.
But probably being aware of your actions, but maybe not associating it with an intention. And just for our listening audience benefit, what, drill down on the word intention. What does that mean to you?
Well, the conscious.
The thought that precedes the action?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And is it really the why, the thinking of why I'm doing what I'm doing would be the intention? So it's kind of the purpose for the action.
Yes.
And when we slow down long enough, it's really interesting to see that almost everything
is associated with
action or word is preceded by a thought.
Yes.
An actual want or a desire, an intention.
And we found some interesting things about authenticity and the as far as the journaling goes and the intentions, once we started looking at the journaling part of it, then we started saying, well, how does this connect with the mind qualities? And then we found out that it was the opposing, not the ideal quality, but the opposing one.
Well, and also with your strengths too, the opposite of your strengths. So, but we'll get into that, but getting to, just so we make sure, because we're applying the word authenticity, and a lot of people use that word and throw it around, but we're applying it in terms of being true to our intentions.
Yes.
Sometimes it's often confused with our actions being truthful, but the reason why we're being true to our intentions is because we're recognizing that the real power in making better choices is to
catch
really
it before,
be aware of
catch
the
it before
thought
the
before the action and think about what we're doing before we do it. And making sure that it's aligned with reliable happiness. So a couple of things that I think are interesting to kind of put as assumptions into this type of way of living is, number one, there's basically two roads with each choice. We're either making a choice towards reliable happiness, or we're making a choice towards stress. So if you can imagine a fork in a road with the two different roads, one being to, Linda says hello on her instant chat. She's welcoming herself back from yoga. Hello, Linda. Good to hear you. Good to see you're out there. But so we got two roads we're going to think of tonight. We're always going to be aware of these two roads. I often say to people coming into Fort Worth meditation that if they had to start their life over again, and they could like look at every choice they made with intention, there'd be a road to reliable happiness, mm-hmm. and there'd be a road to stress.
Right.
Would they make all their choices on the road to reliable happiness? And they all nod their heads. I said, well, obviously, if you're here and you're here because of stress and you want to learn to meditate, then you've made some of your choices, if not most of your choices, on the road to stress. So we got to kind of back up the wheels here and reanalyze our actions and look at the intention behind them and kind of move them off the road of stress onto the road of reliable happiness.
Correct.
So there's two roads that we have to think about. The other thing I want people to kind of be aware or consider is that all of our choices are generally, all of our intentions are based on creating pleasure for ourselves in one form or another. Would you agree with that, Karen?
I would agree with that.
Okay. So number one, we have two choices to make. Number two, two roads that we pick from. Number two is all intention is based on pleasure. Another thing, after working with intention for a while and working with people that run a journal, that we're not asking in this journaling to necessarily restrain cold turkey from an action that's stressful. We're actually asking them to seek down to the pleasure, find out what that pleasure is, and swap that pleasure for an alternate pleasure.
Right. What's the draw? What's the allure? What's the hook?
Yeah, what's the hook?
What gets you caught?
See, once you know your existing hook, you might be able to come up with a better choice. And the raw example I always use is the problem I had with eating sweets after a meal, mm-hmm. right? When we drill down and we look at the candy I was eating, the allure was it was sweet, mm-hmm. right? The drawback was it wasn't healthy, right? So the replacement, the more skillful choice was a fruit. It met the pleasure of sweet,
sure.
but it was a more skillful outcome. So it moved that particular action or choice from the stressful column or unhealthy choice to a more choice, right? So that's the simple example of what the exercise is to yield. We kind of look at all of our actions that we are not getting us what we desired results, causing stress in our life, and we re-examine them through a contemplation journal.
And it's a dynamic kind of journal as well, because I think the way you were explaining it the other night, it's like pretend that you've got these four folders, you know? You're going to, where kind of a traditional journaling is you have a journal, blank pages, and you just write down, it's like a memory dump or an emotional dump at the end of the day or whenever, you know, on a regular schedule. This one, I think you were saying it's kind of like put it down, look at it again, create some space.
Yeah, there were four folders.
Yes.
The folder one was kind of in an unskillful state, this particular action. So in the example I just gave, if I just wrote down that I'm eating candy after a meal, that would be classified as unskillful. As I began to work with it and come up with a solution with candy, it moves from unskillful to skillful. Now, I haven't yet moved it to the third bucket, which would be schedule it and let's make this...
Let's work it.
Let's work it. Let's actually put it in my week and pick one a week or two a week. Keep it real simple. And then the fourth bucket is after you've made the change and the transition, put it in a completion bucket.
What is it ever really complete, though? Would you really call it a complete bucket?
Well, there's some things in life I think we've changed our behavior completely.
But you could still look at it and use it
as... Would
you
like me to recycle my love for you? Gotcha, don't I?
Well...
So some things that you'd like to consider complete. And of course, there's some things that come back and haunt you.
Yes.
You know, it depends on the grooves
I'm talking about the haunting ones.
that's funny. Notice how I talked to them. That'd be crazy if to say I love you. So that would mean at one point I didn't love you and I had to go from unskillful to skillful. I'll get myself in a hole here.
You're forgiven. Go ahead.
We'll talk about that one afterwards,
yeah.
Right? I'm getting eyes.
That.
I'm getting eyes on
to
the
myself.
Radio. Good thing this isn't video. All right. So we kind of put our arms around what authenticity is. And let's kind of jump into the journal itself. And before we get into the content of the journal, let's look at the four choices we have in life and go through those, Carol.
Okay.
So you cover the first one.
It's the things you like to do and you know that they'll lead to good results.
Okay.
That's a no-brainer. I mean, that's...
We don't have to think about that.
No,
we like
because
to
if
do
we like to do it and it gets good results... Give yourself a pat on the back and keep
doing it. So it's nothing we have to really bring into the journal because
that, no.
Right?
That's not a painful choice right
now.
No,
it's not something, like I said, on that road, you've already made those good choices, so they're already on the good road, the good path.
Yeah.
Okay, now number two, things you don't like to do and you know will lead to bad results.
Yeah,
that's
cross that
no-brainer.
Off the list.
Huh?
Cross that off the list.
Cross that one off the list because... If we don't like doing them and it's bad results, then they're not even worth consideration.
Correct. All right, so already two out of four are just
gone. Now we've got two other choices in life. This is amazing when you really think about how simple it all could be if you had full state of mind and, you know, awareness. But number three is things you like to do and you know will lead to bad results.
Yeah, that's the candy thing.
That was, in my case, was
the candy
after the meal. Right? I like doing it, but
it
leads to bad
results.
Okay, number four is things you don't like to do and you know will lead to good results. I call that the exercise, the weightlifting one.
Yeah.
Or the running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like doing it.
But I know it's going to...
Good results. So number three and number four
well,
are the two areas
the
we have to work on.
Right.
But what I tried to do when I designed this journal was only work with number three. Because I think number four, if we were doing so good with the things that we don't like doing that get us good results, then I don't think we're really would be cruising, wouldn't we? I mean, the fact that we're leading kind of a stressful life and we're being authentic and honest about our stress suggests that number three is where the leverage lies. We really need to try to transform those actions. That's an interesting word, transform. Yeah, everybody says, I want to transform. This is about transformation of a character, of a person. Well, if you're going to transform a person, wouldn't you have to transform our actions? Because aren't we the sum total of our actions?
Hmm. Are you saying you don't like the word transformation?
No, I do, but everybody's writing books on transformation, and I look at it as just fundamentally, if you want to transform yourself, transform your actions.
Right.
So I look at number three, the things I... like to do and know that will lead to good results or lead to bad results. If I transform number three and turn it into number four, so you could have considered the grapes to be number four, things I don't like doing and I know will lead to good results, and the candy was number three. So I actually transformed by drilling down on number three, I transformed it into number four.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can transform an action from the unskillful road or the road that leads to stress to the road that leads to reliable happiness, each action is a mini transformation of me.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. But I think you can confuse things by going three and four and do's and don'ts
okay.
and bads and goods. So,
but how about the notion of just transforming actions as a way to transform yourself? Do you buy into you're the sum total of your actions?
Absolutely.
So if
sure. And I know that I do things, there's things that I don't like to do that I know will lead to good results. And I, you know, I mean, ultimately that's where you want to get.
Right. That would be the development. But there's a whole bunch of stuff that you like doing that isn't getting you what you want. Those
yes.
would be the time wasters, right?
Yes. Yes. That's the stuff you kick yourself about time and again. And I shouldn't do that, or I know better. Or, well, if you knew better, you wouldn't be doing it, right?
Yeah.
So... All right, so how do you want to start this one?
Well, let's take the first example. And
okay, well, first of all, you broke the contemplation journal down into the first kind
of... those of you that have the journal, bring one in front of you right now while we're talking. If you don't, I guess you're just going to have to kind of visualize what it is we're going through. But it's a single sheet of paper,
mm-hmm.
right? And
easy.
It basically has some categories. It actually starts
like
with...
It has like four sections.
All right.
And the first one is the unskillful intention or the action that leads me and or others to stress. So in that space is where you're going to write down that little hook or bugaboo that's really something that you want to get rid of or transform into something that's going to lead you to reliable happiness and get you a good result.
So you're going to move it from the road of stressful to the road to happiness.
Correct.
So it's an action.
It is an action.
Or a word, you know. It's an action or a...
Right.
You know, your speech. So then after we actually write it down and reduce it to writing,
correct.
We have a list where we can put down the allures, plural. We can write up to three or four allure.
The allures, the things that are seductive, that pull us in.
The pleasure.
Yeah. And because that's what you said at the beginning. You know, we do things because we find them pleasurable or else we wouldn't be doing them.
But it's interesting, as you and I went through this exercise, sometimes the pleasure is not that obvious. You have to really work at it.
Yeah.
But it's
there. Subtle. It's really, it can be subtle.
Well, that shows that we're not aware of our intentions.
Yeah.
Because the intention is the allure. And if we're having a hard time asking why we're doing what we're doing with pleasure, that tells you that we're not aware of that we're acting out of autopilot.
Yeah.
It just the sheer exercise kind of brings you to the truth of authenticity that I'm not being true to my intentions because I don't know what they are.
Right. But I like the simplicity of this journal page, the one page thing. You know, it's just one page. It's got four, you know.
And I know you wanted a hard copy. You didn't want to just do it. Although eventually I'm going to try to get it on an app, a phone app. But you like the hard copy because you like really writing things down.
I do. I'm kind of that you know, pen and paper kind of person. So I do like that. But I like the four sections. So you've got listing the action, the unskillful action. The second one is writing down the allure, the attraction of what draws you to that. What's that pleasure that keeps coming back, that makes you keep going back and doing that action?
What's the power before the action?
And then the drawback, because for every
action, there's a consequence.
Yes.
So that's the effect of the action.
Whether it's the effect on you or others.
Right. But that's also pretty cool to think about. What is the drawback? Because you're building the case to transform that action and move it to the other column of skillfulness.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
By really talking and writing down the drawback. And I say talking because you and I have worked our journals together, which is essentially using admirable friends to help you out.
Yeah.
Which is helpful during this because if we're not aware of all of our intentions, then like you and I found, it's like, what do you think I'm doing that for, Carol? And you'd give me some input and you'd ask me what I thought was your pleasure and I'd say, well, maybe you were doing it for that. And you go, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
So it's really good to have a buddy in this thing.
It does because you're so close to it. You're so close to the problem or the unskillful action that you can't see it. And I think we talk about it all the time, whether we've spoken about it on the radio or at Fort Worth, that, you know, sometimes a friend knows you better than you know yourself because they're not as close to the situation. They kind of have that space to see it.
Yeah, and the other thing we mentioned, too, that if you don't trust an admirable friend at this point, that what you could do is use us as shadow play. I call it practicing. So don't talk in first person necessarily about your actions. You could talk about it kind of in a what if somebody was doing this? How would they handle this?
I've got a friend.
I got a friend who's happening. But it's a good thing to do because you can begin really thinking about these things in a safe way.
Anything that gets you on the process of contemplating this.
It's good.
This unskillful to skillful actions.
Yeah. So we're always there if you want to anonymously send us something and then ask us to put it on the radio, send it to hello@admirablefriends.org and we'll never release who it's from and we'll talk it through. Anytime somebody sends us one of these sheets of paper with an action that they want us to drill down on and help them kind of think it through, just like we do in the mornings here with ours.
Right.
And then the last section is the actual transformed action. In other words, what's the call to action? I've now looked at the allure. I've looked at the drawback. What's the new number four? What have I replaced it with?
Right.
What's the new pleasure? And remember, seek the pleasure because we're not asking people to eat raw meat here, right? What you're really doing is you're finding that pleasure in a different form. And it, most of the time, it's something.
Pleasure.
Yeah, well, skillful.
That's going to give you the good result.
It might be not instant. It might be a little delayed gratification, but it's there. In other words, let's take the running. You know, you may have to transform something into, instead of doing a 1 mile, is doing a 2 mile. And you might have to delay it, but you're going to say, well, think of the sense of accomplishment I'm going to have after I do the second mile.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your, you've reduced it to writing, and you've come up with a new allure that allows you and gives you the fuel to move and potentially decide to schedule that journal entry and bring it into your real life. So we've got the contemplation life, which it's all thinking about it. What do you usually say? Stay longer, move?
Oh, move closer, stay longer.
Yeah. So you've got a chance to really think about it before you decide to commit to actually changing yourself or changing your actions.
And put it down, bring it back the next day, a couple days later, because...
Marinate on it. You love marinating.
Well, you know, the thing is, time has an amazing, as you say, transformation quality. I mean, what you see today, what you put down on paper and what you see today, you may see something totally different tomorrow or 2 days from now. Because your frame of mind might be different, circumstances surrounding it are different, the words catches you differently.
Yeah.
So it's not like you got to sit down like homework and intensively, you know.
Well, one of the things I like about the way you operate is you do it very consistently, so you don't overcommit yourself. Sometimes you undercommit yourself, but you take it very consistently. You'll take an action, you'll see it through. Mm-hmm.
I like the recommendation that you said, take one at a time, because there's nothing worse than starting, you know, and biting off more than you can chew, and then you beat yourself up or you don't have that win-win feeling. Do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think one a week is not a bad goal.
Yeah. It takes, but while you're doing that one, you might also be working three or four of these in your journal. Really thinking about actions that you hope to change sometime down the road, or New Year's resolutions, or things that are just plaguing you. But I found it so therapeutic to write this stuff down. I just loaded it up, you know, because I'm not taking it personal. I'm looking at all my actions now because I know this process works.
Okay.
So I'm just loading, dumping all my unskillful actions, and at least they're somewhere.
It's sort of like a different version of a bucket list. Like instead of things, you know, it could be like, a bucket list of a different sort, you know?
But I have faith that we can transform each action one at a time. But I like the way you go about it, because you really go about it simply one at a time. And you see it through, and slow and easy wins the race. It's kind of the rabbit and the hare show, you and I.
I think so.
All right, so that's the outline. And, of course, with each sheet of paper, we put those four choices down there just so we make sure. It's almost like we should have two choices and get rid of those first two because we know they're no-brainers. Okay, so let's take one of our first listeners who filled one out. These are real live entries that we're talking about here.
Okay, so the first one, we've got an unskillful intention or an action. So what's the first one?
This was, I'm doubting myself in matters dealing with confrontation. Oops, I went too fast. I'm making bad I went too fast. Let's go back to the beginning one. The first one is, I'm trying too hard to force success and not being patient.
Hmm.
So that's the unskillful action. Trying too hard to force success and not being patient.
Got it.
And why don't you help us with the allure here?
The allure that this person was seeing as part of this trying too hard to force success and not being patient was the opportunity of achieving my goals immediately. So
the opportunity, which he was kind of the
anticipation. They wanted that instant gratification kind of thing?
Well, he wrote two things. I shouldn't say he, we'll say the person wrote two things. The opportunity of achieving my goals immediately, and he put in parentheses anticipation, and then seeing the positive results of my goals immediately. So it was a combination of the desire to want that goal, the anticipation of achieving it, as well as the adrenaline high of achieving it. So that was the allure of really trying hard. So this is a real achiever type here. And the drawback they listed was causes stress to myself. And the second one is me being stressed causes me to be short and angry, causing other stress, which is really quite insightful.
Yes. Yes.
So
not only did
this person
say
actually
they cause stress for themselves, but also it manifests itself into causing stress for other people.
Yeah, that's
they exhibited qualities that just weren't.
That's a good level of awareness. That you realize it's not only causing stress for you, but your stress has got a derivative effect on others. So that's the drawback. And the skillful intention, which we have in parentheses, means the alternative pleasure that leads me and others from stress towards reliable happiness. In this case, the number one was look for symptoms earlier.
Symptoms like?
Symptoms of the stress. So,
so
in other
feeling
words,
agitated, maybe if this person felt agitated before.
Well, what I think that means is that there's two aspects to the stress associated with this person's unskillful action. The first is the physical manifestation of the stress itself, and we have to start there during our day. We've got to recognize that it's stress.
Mm-hmm.
This is stress before we can ever get to cause, right?
Right.
Not necessarily, but we could start there. I mean, if the person's really skilled, they're familiar with the cause before it arises, and they truncate the cause. But if we start with the physical stress that says, you know, I'm getting all hyper here because I'm trying
to
achieve,
yeah.
I'm all worked up, then they turn around and say, well, what's the cause? Well, the cause here goes back to the allure of the opportunity for achieving their goals, which was before that, or seeing the pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
So, in point of fact, they ultimately have to let go of that pleasure associated with the anticipation versus, see, if they just keep letting go of the stress, it's like putting water on a smoke instead of getting to the fire that
mm-hmm.
precedes the smoke. So what this person skillfully did was say, look for symptoms early and then look for causes earlier. So they've separated here between symptoms and causes, which I think is pretty
interesting.
It means that they've spent some time comprehending their stress, and they recognize that there's a symptom of stress and there's also a cause, which in this case is the allure. So then the last skillful intention would be to find other pleasures to associate with the process and less on the outcome. So they've also recognized that the outcome and focusing on the outcome of the results of their desires is where their stress is coming from. If they spent more time, for instance, this is an achiever type. If this achiever type of person, instead of focusing that desire to succeed on the outcome, let's say the process, they desired the process itself. So they spent their, they found achievement. Well, in other words, if you were desiring cake at the end of the game and you were a cook,
mm-hmm.
you'd put all your desire and all your sense of achievement to when the cake was done. Well, if you could redirect that energy, that positive energy, into the ingredients and the process of baking, you'd relieve the stress because the stress they recognize is due to the anticipation of the outcome, which basically takes them off the moment of baking in this
right.
example.
Right.
So this is a real smart practitioner here.
Yeah. But like when you just said about the cake thing, I mean, you've missed the whole, I mean, that's like autopilot because you've missed the whole process until the cake comes out.
Yeah. You focus so much on the end game. But the point is you're not going to change this person. They're the achiever type.
Yeah.
So
you might as well use that strength to their advantage.
Yeah. They're misusing or misapplying that strength today because they're focusing it in the wrong direction. They're focusing towards the outcome versus the means to the end.
It's leading them to the bad result versus the
yeah.
skillful result.
So it's not, hey, you got to go change yourself or you got to stop being an achiever type.
Oh, gosh, no.
No, because you're not going to do that. That's their personality. So what you've done is basically, and they've done it themselves. This is what's great.
Yeah, this is without any prompting from you, I might add. This
no,
is just
I
like,
went through this with this particular person in a coaching session, and they had filled this out. And if you really want to laugh, it was a 19-year-old. If you want to really think about how encouraging this kind of process is, a 19-year-old figured this out.
Does it make you think, gosh, I wish I was that insightful when I was 19?
No. It makes me feel really happy. It really does. It's so hopeful, you know. I know the process works for me, but when I see a young kid learning it early, you know, you...
That's wonderful.
It is. It's just like the chances this kid's got to really reinvent himself is...
That's like all the young adults that come into Fort Worth Meditation, too. You see
oh.
them, and they have the wherewithal and the...
30-somethings. I don't know what it is. It's that 30-something that's filling our audience there.
They're seeking.
It's like they're just old enough to realize life isn't exactly, you know. Cal, let's take a break here because I'm getting a buzz from our thing. So, you know, if we could, let's just take a little bit of a break so we can break this day up.
Okay. Take a break.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And we're back.
We're back.
I had a thought that for those that are out there listening that don't have the benefit of the contemplation journal page.
In front of them.
If they have time, sometime, you know, this week, print off the journal page and then maybe re-listen through podcast so that they can kind of get an idea. Because I don't know whether it's...
Yeah, if they're confused, listen, take in what you want, right? And listen to it on podcast and bring out your journal page.
Because I think it's helpful to have the sheet of paper in front of you. And I was just hoping you weren't confusing everybody and I felt bad.
What do you mean I'm not confusing? You're part of the show too.
Oh.
So what do I take the bad part?
Well, I haven't... Given,
I caught that.
I haven't input enough yet to confuse.
I caught that and so did the audience.
You called me out.
No, you called me out.
Well, it was like the boomerang effect. It came right back at me.
Okay.
All right.
So anyways, hats off to this 19-year-old who did this journal, and thank you for allowing us to use it. Let's go to another one,
okay,
Carol.
We've got another one.
Go ahead, you start.
I can kind of relate to this one. This person, the unskillful intention or action, was holding on to grudges.
Oh, you definitely can relate to that one. I'm a good kid.
It's like I think many of us can, buddy.
I know. So take ownership.
I just said I would. I just said I can relate to it.
All right. I'm sorry.
Okay. Two of the allures or draws or hooks or whatever was they felt that the pleasure that they got from holding on to the grudge was a feeling of self-righteousness. That's interesting.
Ooh, and that's a pleasure. That's a deep one.
Yeah, can you believe it? Like
That's an honest confession here.
Self-righteousness. Wow. That is honest. So they got pleasure out of feeling self-righteous and holding onto a grudge like they were right and kind of like...
That's interesting.
See, when you put it in terms of that, it makes it sound really... I mean, when you say, I get a pleasure from doing and then fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Related to
Well, that. You can see when you're holding a grudge that you would never notice your self-righteousness, would you? You'd be so focused on the grudge that you wouldn't... Again, the action is the grudge.
Right.
And the intention would be the self-righteousness, and you never see this intention.
Right.
So you could never let go of the fire. You might say, well, I let go of that one. I'm over that grudge.
Yeah.
You never were.
No.
Because you never got to the self-righteousness.
That's true.
What's the other one?
Pleasure that was written down was the pleasure of playing the victim. Like, I've been wronged.
That's kind of the other side of the self-righteous, right?
Interesting, huh?
I'm right there, and I've been wronged.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the pleasure was playing the victim. I've been wronged.
That's a pleasurable feeling?
It must be. It's under the allure.
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. I guess I've never seen the victim side for me. I don't think so.
You're not a grudge person. So.
Yeah. I got bigger problems than that.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that one next. So anyways, the drawback, which makes perfect sense, it only hurts the person that's holding the grudge. And I always
me.
Come back to that.
They wrote down, it only hurts me.
It only hurts me. Right. Well, I'm using, because I'm reading it, it's about the other person.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, the person holding the grudge, it just hurts them. But when you think about it, it's that, you posted that thing about holding a grudge is like taking poison and hoping the other person dies.
Right.
It's like, oh my gosh, that is...
Well, so this is really cool. So the person really writes down and confesses their self-righteousness, the victim mentality, and
mm-hmm.
then turns around and says, it's only hurting me.
Right.
So you can really see this contemplation that you talk about really taking place because you're grinding it out, aren't you?
Right.
You're writing it down.
And it's not like they're writing paragraphs, like they're writing...
No, they're just bullets.
Yeah. It's like, okay, just kind of do a...
So the structure works.
And another drawback, they said it takes up productive time. So when you think about it, yeah, I mean, if you're holding a grudge and all you're doing is dwelling on it, I mean, just think of all that valuable time you could be working on something else that's more skillful. Because, I mean, the person you're holding a grudge against doesn't even know you're holding a grudge against them. Chances are they can't even remember what it was. You probably can't even remember what it was that started it off. So anyways. And then they wrote down at the bottom the skillful intention of the action.
I call this the fix, right?
Yeah,
this is
the alternative pleasure was wishing the person goodwill. So I guess calling into mind the ideal mind qualities.
Of goodwill.
Would be helpful.
And I guess, you know, when we talk about an alternative pleasure, that's why practicing goodwill is so important. If you get in the habit of practicing goodwill for yourself and for others on a daily basis, you begin deriving pleasure from that. Whereas initially, that might not be seen as a pleasure that you could swap off for that playing the victim or self-righteousness.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to practice goodwill, you know, because goodwill does produce pleasure. If you just think about it long enough, hoping you and for others to do well and to be reliably happy really is kind of a spring within us that makes us feel good.
Yeah. It's that cleansing.
Pleasure.
It's that kind of...
It's an inner pleasure, isn't it?
It is. But
so
you know,
much.
The thing about goodwill, correct me if I'm wrong, when we were talking about it, it was one of the bullets was, you don't have to be best friends with this person.
Right.
I mean, so it's not like you have to be best buds or like kiss and make up. I mean, it's just wish them well and...
Well, it's not just wishing them well. It's you're wishing they find and act upon the actions that will get them well.
It's
so it's really
happiness.
Asking them to be a little wiser than they are. So if you're having a problem with them and you know they're treating you bad, when you say, I hope they kind of figure it out here,
mm-hmm.
That's not an act of friendship by any means.
No.
That's a wise kind of wish.
But in conjunction with that, wishing yourself goodwill and hoping you get on with it too.
Yeah, well, you always start
plus.
With yourself. But then it's easy to kind of move it out to your friends, your family, and then hopefully to strangers and enemies down the road if you can get stronger with it. Because the beauty of goodwill is it has no limits. If you get used to wishing it, you're giving from your heart. And you're really producing this spring of positive energy outwardly. And like you said, it's not making me friends with my enemies. It's just finding a way to wish them well.
Right.
So I think it's a very positive thing. I know I use it. But in this case, if somebody is really acting self-righteous and you compare that pleasure, and that's their driving motive, and you're asking to switch to goodwill, they're not going to turn on a dime.
No.
And all of a sudden say, oh, I listen to Buddy and Carol, and we're going to wish goodwill today. They're going to have to start practicing goodwill.
Right. Yeah.
I know it didn't come instant for me, and I can't imagine it would come
no.
for anybody.
No. You've got to try it on for size, see if it works, build confidence.
Develop pleasure. So again, you're swapping one pleasure for another because we're treating ourselves as humans. We're not asking ourselves to make things so hard and difficult for change. So everything is the stuff we don't like to do that'll get us good results. You know, some of it is just a better pleasure and you need to take the time to delay your gratification of instant pleasure, which in this case is what? Self-righteousness is like a cocaine hit. And it's not going to lead you anywhere. You know, the drawbacks already showed that it's an unskillful choice.
Right.
So what's the other...
But that's the beauty with writing it down, though. I mean, it gives you a visual. I mean, because you can sit here and mull it over, but with benefit of writing it down or else seeing it words on paper, it has a certain impact.
It does, and I also think it helps to have others. I know in my coaching sessions, you know, with my clients, it helps a lot just to be a sounding board. Where you have that level of trust that they can actually write this stuff down and talk it through. That's what I hope Admirable Friends to be. But like I said, if it starts with just a third-person discussion or an anonymous kind of inquiry onto this, but this is the way to drill down without, you know, obviously when you get into advanced stages of meditation, you become more aware of your intentions and you become very intentional and aware of all your actions. But that's not the way most of us live. Most of us are really busy and moving. So this kind of journaling on a daily basis is a tremendous skill. And, you know, Carol, if you look at it and you reverse engineer the successful people in the world, they say 95% of them all journal.
Mm. Wow.
You know, so the statistics support the journaling. I like this because it's not a wide open journal where you lay it on somebody's desk and say, here, go write about your life. I mean, it could be about the things you like, what I did today, what she said wrong to me. I mean, this is a very
contextual
journal.
This is a call to action. This is a call to action that really has, like you said, a transformative nature to it.
It's purposeful.
Yeah. Anyways, another one, I was trying not to take it personal. And I know that...
Don't go over that one too quick.
I was just going to say that we were talking... there were other mind qualities, you know, when we were talking on the previous 10 weeks about not taking it personal and... Because it's just not going to reap any benefits.
Well, and the good skill there is using the committee of the mind. You know, as we've talked before in yours and my practice, when we walk each other through the committee discussions in our heads, you know, what you do is you look at the multiple voices in your head and you try to become that chairman of the board. That's
so
in charge.
You would say that Mr. Self-Righteous was on the board.
Yeah.
And
but the chairman is going to listen to Mr. Self-Righteous and say,
there.
I'm not giving you a seat today. I've now got this new person out there that's Mr. Goodwill, and he's going to talk. I'm going to allow Mr. Goodwill to exercise his arguments and suggest a better way to go. But you would never hear all these board members until you shifted the conversation from Mr. Self-Righteous to Mr. Chairman.
And this is kind of this... Contemplation journal is a really nice way of separating those board members out.
Oh, yeah. You identify
you know,
them.
The team. You know, I know what team you're on. You're on the unskillful team and you're on the skillful team.
Well, each one of those board members represents a certain desire or a pleasure that you've hatched a plan in the past that gives you a hit. So you've really got to uncover all these intentions that have led you to your actions that are causing you stress. You got to work your way through it. So you got to... The chairman's seat is the place to do it, because if you take it personal, it's like trying to see your own eyes. You can't see them. So while you're acting out of the Mr. Self-Righteous, you would never see it. You would need a friend to help you. And even then, how does your friend tell you? You're just acting self-righteous, Carol. Well, first of all, in the time that that's happening, that's going to be a very threatening approach. At the end of the day, you or the person that's dealing with this has to see it for themselves.
That's correct.
And the simple, most trusting way is to begin reflecting on your life with a journal. You know, what are those actions? Hey, what's really making it? You wouldn't have this conversation, would you, if you didn't have a journal? You'd just keep doing the actions.
Right.
You'd reinforce the self-righteousness.
Said it breaks it. It really does break down that narrative that you have in your head all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sure the dialogue goes on and I know I've spun a yarn or two in my head that just... takes me off too.
I find meditation does a very similar thing because you're quieting everything down and you're hearing the voices and you're watching your thoughts come and go. So it's another form, just like this journaling, and they go hand in glove together very well.
Well, I do think anything that slows you down and gives you that reflective moment is beneficial. It's just one more moment of separating the action from the deed.
Well, what I was talking to with one of our clients is that what we could do is actually turn the fix on this before you take it live, is maybe do some reminders during the day through the iPhone of the choices, like time to wish goodwill, set up a goodwill every 3 hours.
So like a mindfulness spell?
Yeah. But you would do it for a goodwill for a particular person or a group. So you find a way to get it into your repertoire.
That's interesting.
So you can make it more pleasurable. So what are the other fixes?
I don't want to take another one.
Try to not take it personally and wish myself goodwill. Okay. So that's all under the category of holding on
to
grudges.
So really, there's no mystery. I mean, it's not difficult stuff. It's just honest stuff.
Yeah.
Truthful stuff. It's like...
No, this is not going to take a class on filling out a journal. This is just going to take somebody who's at the right place and time and ready to work through... Well, first of all, you have to be willing to believe that your actions matter, which a lot of people are now, but they also have to be at least stressful enough where the actions they're admitting, these actions I've been doing with my life aren't getting me what I want. You see, they got the I, they're responsible.
Right.
They're not blaming others.
Well, and what's that? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results.
It's
like we just kind of go through it.
It's autopilot.
Yeah. And so eventually it's like enough.
But if you drill down at why I'm doing it all over again, is you're doing it over and over again because you're not aware of your intentions.
And there's something pleasurable that keeps you there.
It keeps you hanging in.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a draw or else you wouldn't be doing it, because we said the second thing's things you don't like to do that you know lead to bad results.
But think about it. If you don't identify that pleasure, you'll never change your behavior.
No. And that's the key, really. That's the linchpin. That's where the...
That's the shift.
Turn. Yeah.
That's the real shift. That's the true authenticity of being, I'm ready to be honest about my intentions. It almost, initially when you start this process, it feels kind of weird because, you know, it's like going public with the reason you do things. But it's no big deal. As long as you learn to not take it personal, you realize that we all like this. We all do these things out of pleasure.
Well, everybody operates out of pleasure.
Right. So obviously there's a true story here. Just get to it. And then find out an alternative pleasure that'll lead to a more skillful result without depriving yourself of anything. At most, you're going to be delaying gratification with your choice. At most. But it has such a, you know, goodwill to me has totally changed my approach because it has such a positive impact of wishing others well. You know, you very rarely end up negatively feeling towards anybody because you're always wishing that they find the route to happiness. It's not like you're turning around saying, I like this person. You know that's not me anyways. That's not what works. Okay, let's just take another one before we have to close up. And let's do the one, doubting myself and Matt is dealing with confrontation at work.
Doubting myself in matters dealing with confrontation at work. Huh, okay. So that's the unskillful action.
The allure is I don't have to confront the person.
Well, that's right, because if you put doubt in there, then you've kind of said, well, you know, like reasonable doubt, like you can't convict.
Yeah. You're feeding into your doubt.
It's like, well, yeah, better not go, like, you know, error on the side of doubt. Let's give him a pass.
I like to think too much about worst case scenarios. That's interesting because, you know, I have found through my doubts about anything is from thinking too much. That's the origin of doubt.
Yeah.
So this person has found out what I found out, that the allure is, and sometimes you like to think, if you're an analytical type like I am, you like to, you know, let me think about this, let me think about that. Should I get this? You saw it the other day. We're buying sleeping bags. I'm sitting there analyzing the heck out of it, and you and the sales girl are rolling your heads, saying, you know, rolling your eyes, saying, how much are you going to think about this? The choice
is
obvious.
Yeah, just wrap yourself up in the sleeping bag. Does it feel good? Yes, it'll keep you warm. Bye.
We better cruise. We only got 2 minutes left on the show.
No way.
So
okay.
So the allure, what's the drawback here?
The problems don't get resolved because you're just always procrastinating.
Yeah.
And you blame yourself for not saying what you truly felt. You know, it's like I should have said kind of thing, scenario.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's something to be said, like you don't feel you are authentic enough. Do you know what I mean? You weren't true to yourself because you didn't say what was on your mind.
Yeah, I always blame myself for not saying what I truly felt. That's a huge drawback.
Yeah.
That really motivates you to want to change. And this person did not come up with a skillful intention, and that's okay. because they obviously hadn't got to that part of the journal.
No, and that's part of the whole thing we were talking about earlier. It's like, okay, you get so far, you put it away, bring it back out again at a later date, and you'll see it with a fresh set of eyes, and you might have the solution or a few different skillful actions.
This is really cool. I like this show. I hope you guys like it.
It was different. I hope it didn't.
Well, it's less to me. It's less conceptual, less philosophy, and get into the.
Well, I like the practical
part
of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like call to action. It's like, okay, enough already. What do you want me to do?
This is where change takes place.
Let's do
right here, right on this journal.
Yeah.
I can see this happening.
Straighten your shoulders, put your head up, and dig in.
Yeah. Well, it's time.
Already?
Yeah. To bring Serena on and say goodbye.
All right, until next week, everybody.
I know. I miss our guests, though. It was good to talk with you, don't get me wrong, but the guests are nice to have,
too. It was kind of fun having guests.
Yeah. Hey, any guests out there, make sure you give us a call. We want you on the show. It's easy to patch in, too, even if you don't want to come to our house and join our studio. Until next week, which is going to be on Vice and Virtue next week.
Yes.
Until next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
We appreciate you listening.
And we're grateful for your attention and help.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.